Blog Talk Radio.
The following is a Razor Edge production, Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio. It's showtime! And here's our host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor.
Greetings and welcome to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio Show. Our show is about disability services, disability rights, and your disability dollar. Your voice and advocate, voice your concerns, voice your opinion, but please let your voice be heard. Our mission is to bring to you the people, the places, and the things that can change your life for the better, which is inclusion into society, which is living more independently in your home and in your community. America, welcome to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, your friendly neighborhood networker. Our motto is increase your network and you'll increase your net worth. Behind microphone number two is our hoster with the mostest and our announcer and engineer, Miss Renee. Again, welcome to you, our listening audience. This is Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio Show. Again, I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor. Although I've been blind for more than 55 years, when I was a mere lad of 13, a big firecracker, which we call in the DMV, cherry bomb exploded in my face and blinded me in both eyes. But in spite of that, every morning I rise, I feel blessed, highly favored, and I know God is good. Greetings, and how are you today, Ms. Renee?
Reverend Ray, I am great. I'm enjoying the final unofficial week of summer. So, like everybody else, I am getting out of town and doing some fun things.
Well, you know, I heard some uplifting news today on the radio on the Team 980, where the Washington football team, I just stumbled over not saying that old name and offending people, but us that grew up with that name, it's just going to be hard. So anyway, with the Washington football team, I heard for the first time in years that they already have a sellout at the stadium. And it's the Washington football team fans, not the fans from New Jersey, from the Giants, from the, you know, it's actually the, and can you imagine, boy, how they, I mean, sold out, and we don't play until, what, next week or something. So, I mean, that just starts my fall, what is this, fall, what are we going into, fall? That just starts my fall off this way a lot. Yeah. That just started my fall off. Well, I heard that. I was like, what? And they ain't got no tickets. I remember when tickets were going for almost $3, you know.
Right.
But they sold out a week ahead of time. So that's good news that somebody can use. But anyway, Ms. Renee, be that as it may, our guest and show for today.
Well, your loved one has dementia. Those must be among the most challenging words that you have ever heard. And our special guest, Reginald A. Lawson, has written a book about his mother's dementia journey and how he provided at-home care for her long distance. Welcome, Mr. Lawson.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me on the show. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Usually, you know, when you, your first time, you know, we treat you like a guest, special and all of that, and we, you know, get water for you, invite you to sit down in the house. But after that, you're a family member, and you get your own water, you get your own seat, you fight at the table to get your own food. So welcome. So I really appreciate you coming. And just tell us, you know, a little bit about yourself, sir.
Well, I am originally from Wilmington, Delaware, the oldest of four by 10 years, so I did a lot of growing up kind of by myself. But I had a very strong, loving, caring mother, and by strong, I mean old school strong. She didn't play that. None of them played that in our family. We believed in education, and we believe in loving one another as well as our neighbors. I came to Maryland to attend the University of Maryland Eastern Shore back in the good old 70s. And I have stayed ever since, those 40-some years. And I'm a father of three, and I'm a Prince George's.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now we'll have some peering, shocking, revealing questions to ask you. I'll let Miss Renee start, and then I'll look over her shoulder and come up behind. Okay.
I want, you know, this show, this, thank you. This show is about caregiving, specifically dementia caregiving, but a lot of the lessons that you're going to share today are applicable to anybody. Tell us a little bit about your mother. You said she was an old school and that she was the mother of four. When did you notice changes in her behavior, and what were they?
That, you know, that's a great question. I did not notice them right away. I just thought it was signs of aging to where she may forget something here and there because she's pretty sharp-witted and she knew everything and everybody. But one time what really startled me was we went to visit her brother out in Detroit, Michigan, and she came down from Wilmington on the train, got off the train, we got on the plane, went to Detroit, spent the whole day with my uncle. About 2 o'clock that next morning, I saw my mother standing in the hallway. And she had a puzzled look on her face. And I couldn't figure it out. And she just said, "Who moved my furniture?" And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" She said, "Somebody done moved my furniture." And I'm looking at her saying, "Mom, we're at Uncle George's." And then my uncle comes down the hall and he asks her, "Is she okay?" And she just said, "Oh, I must be cracking up." And we had no other indication that anything was afoot at all the rest of the trip. We came back home. I put her on that train. She got off, and it wasn't until probably a year and a half later that I got a call that says, "Something's going on with your mother. She's saying she can't remember." And we went and got tested and diagnosed. So for a whole 18 months, I had no clue. And what I found was that she was suffering dementia long before the trip to Detroit.
Mm-hmm. So how old was she?
My mother at the time that this started coming was probably about 61.
Wow,
and,
that's pretty young.
It's young, and it's kind of confusing because there's things, you know, we say it's senility back then or you're just getting old, but it didn't come sudden, but once it hit, it had a grip on her.
Huh.
So,
okay,
let me just ask you this before, Mrs. Renee, let me ask you this before you follow. Let me say your mother was one of those old mothers that didn't play nothing. So she believed in that I brought you here and I'll take you out of here. Is that it?
Oh, not only did she believe that, you better learn the look. She don't even say that. She give you that look. That's how our family was. You better get the look or you getting off the floor. That's how I was.
You know, young people have no idea.
Go.
The look. Now, you mentioned that you were the older sibling. What, is there a father or your dad or a spouse involved after this diagnosis?
Actually, no, my dad, he died in the military, and so my mother, in remarrying, it just so happened that her husband had suffered an amputation. And we were going to see him back and forth in the hospital, and my mother had said, "Do me a favor, whatever you do, baby, don't put me in a place like this." So we were actually trying to get the apartment in that residence, and then she said, "Don't do this." He subsequently passed away, and to show you how devastating dementia is, my mother asked me one day, did Harry die? And I'm like, "Yeah." Oh. And she's like, "How come nobody told me?" And she started crying. She didn't even remember attending his funeral 2 days later.
Wow.
That's how, you know, that. So to say, was he there? No, he was not there. And it was it was a hard nosedive into what this disease can do to a person and how quickly it can do it and how it robs them of things. I stopped saying he passed away. About 3 months later, she asked me one day, did he die? And at that point, I figured her mind kind of came back around and says, yes, he did, real softly. And she says, well, I hope he's at rest. But that,
wow.
No, he was, and she didn't have the benefit of his comfort or company.
Now, one of the things that you said around 61, she was diagnosed. Did mm-hmm. you make the decision she would be go in for diagnosis, or did she make that decision? And can you tell a little bit about that process? How do you
sure.
introduce the doctor that I think there is something going on here?
Actually, was doing one of her visits, and she asked me to go with her. She always said that she was a plain woman, and she didn't understand the big words the doctors use, and she wanted me to go. And during that visit, the doctor noticed something and asked me, has your mother been doing this often? And I says, every now and then. And she started probing, and she suggested, the doctor did, that my mother may have dementia and we should get tested. And I asked her what was it, and she told me a condition of the cognition. And I said, okay, well, okay, I'll look into it. She said, I don't think you understand. Dementia is going to start messing with her memory and her functions. And I kind of just looked at the doctor because my mother's a warrior, right? And I said, Doc, I appreciate it, but I got this. And she says, let me say it to you this way. When dementia gets worse, she says, first of all, I'm going to have your mother's driving privileges totally suspended. At that point, I was ready for a fight. She says, let me explain this. When dementia gets worse, your mother is going to forget what a red light means versus a green light. And when mm-hmm. she said that, it got my attention. She says, then she's going to forget what the brake pedal means versus the accelerator. I appreciated that the doctor was alert enough to say, I'm going to take away those driving privileges. And we did subsequently go ahead and get formally tested. And there are places that do that. Some of the tests are really simple. They're not invasive or anything like that. It's simple questioning. But as I sat there, the gentleman said, I need you to be quiet, but you can stay in the room. And he asked some fundamental questions that my mother was just failing left and right. And he just said, who's that sitting there, pointing to me? And she said, that's Reginald. And he said, who's Reginald? And she said, you know who he is. And he says, well, who is he? She said, that's Reginald. Stop asking me that. So she couldn't even connect me to being her son.
That's
some of the things that people need to understand. It doesn't announce itself. It doesn't start like you start having tremors or anything. It just grabs them, and it just takes them for a moment, and then they'll come back in the beginning stages.
So, going back to the question.
Renee, let me ask you this right at this point. So Reggie, did she or do they have somewhat of an understanding that they don't remember? So like that answer she gave just to make up for that she didn't remember, or was that a conscious thing for her? Or, I mean, you know, when she said, well, you know who he is, I mean, was it that she didn't know and she would just pretend? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Okay, to answer your question, she knew something was wrong. And one of the things that they go through, and dare I say the caregivers also go through, is a period of denial. And so one day she paused and she said, how come I can't remember something? So she was aware she couldn't. And I'm saying something like, what? She said, I must be cracking up. But when she said I must be cracking up, it wasn't really – deathly afraid, but once mm-hmm. she realized she couldn't do something or remember something, you could see it started to terrify her. And that's part of the challenge, is that they will get quiet as opposed to maybe with some other kind of a disability. You can see, you know, they're stricken. This you can't see. So
okay.
I think she knew it, but she couldn't put her finger on it.
Okay. I don't want to. Okay, when you hear that music there, we train out guests that Reverend Ray have to go in his pocket and pay his employees, and so they don't, you know, they don't get on the, they get a unit, to get a union together, you know, like they did against Starbucks and going to start walking the. But so that means that I have to pay some bills. So we're going to come on back on the other side, Reggie, with you in this very important topic. Ms. Renee.
You are listening to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And back to our guest, Reginald A. Lawson, who has written a book that could be called The Caregiver's GPS Tool, Things He Learned Caring for His Mother, who was diagnosed with dementia. Back to you, Reverend Ray.
Thank you. And let me just follow up on that, Reggie, what you were saying. In terms of denial, the person that's going through it with your mother in terms of denial, what about you and the family members around her and her friends? Do they... catch her on right away and say, okay, she need help, or some of those into the denial, and how that affects the whole situation?
It's the latter, what you just said. Everyone was in denial because the first thing is they're frowning. They're not recognizing the little bits and pieces where she kind of comes and goes. And unfortunately, they tend to get to the point where they can't handle that, and they stop coming around. So they're in denial.
Oh, wow.
Even though you tell them, and my siblings were that way. My siblings were 10, 15 minutes away from my mom. They wouldn't take her to a doctor's appointment, and that was hard for me to accept. But I later come to understand they didn't have the capacity to do it, and maybe God just gave me an extra whatever. But she, you know, her friends would not come around, and she started to miss that socialization. But I saw why it was frustrating for them, and some of them were actually sitting there crying. Dementia is called the long goodbye. So the person that you know is slipping away right in front of you, and they are sitting there, and all of a sudden they start talking about their childhood. And you're like, what in the world? So for us, we keep, and this is one of the things caregivers need to understand, we keep pushing our reality at them. You know, you're in your house. You do live here. Today is such and such. What you talking about? But for them, it's not. It is not.
I want to go back and ask a question.
The
long goodbye. two important points that I want to bring up is you talked about the talking diagnosis that the doctor had. Is there an invasive or a medical diagnosis that also goes along with the interviewing kinds of questions?
There is. They do a couple of things, not so much taking blood or anything. Like, there's no blood test for it per se. Usually they find out about the amyloid development in the brain after a person has expired, or if they agree to some invasive MRI kind of a thing. But usually, and here's a part of it, they will show you a picture of five animals, and they will say, name those animals. And when she mistook a giraffe for a cat and a dog for an elephant, they may say, I'm going to say four different numbers, repeat them back to me. And she couldn't do it in sequence. They would ask something, they ask my mother, who's the current president? And she says, you know who it is. Why are you asking me? He says, well, tell me. She couldn't tell me. She had no idea. And then she looked at me, and she said, the black guy. That's the one, right? I said, well. So, I mean, the test, for the most part, they're that simple. And I say to people, you can kind of do that. I'm not saying you're the physician, but things, basically short-term memory is the first thing to go. So they won't even remember what they had to eat or that they ate as it progresses. So no, it's not so much invasive as it is just anecdotal.
But, you know, you said something in your book that probably needed to hear 10 years ago, and that was your siblings may not have the capacity to do what you're doing.
Yeah.
I want to make a note that you were 2 hours away from your mother mm-hmm. as you're providing all of this care. And something mm-hmm. that I think is so important is when and how did you make the decision to keep her at home?
That's a hard one. It still hits me. One, she had said, "Don't put me away," and she wasn't bad. We were just talking about her husband, but when it did get bad, I pretty much made an oath to my mother. And I had to try to see if I could find a way. Now, when I say it still hurts to this day, everyone in my family, all her friends, started basically guilting me. How dare you? You're leaving her at risk. You need to put her away. You're being selfish. All those things came at me.
Oh.
And it got to a point where there was a real clear understanding. If you come across that threshold, it better be about what's best for my mother and not attacking me or her. So, I mean, it got lonely. It got hard. They were giving me brochures. They were giving me discounts. We went to visit a couple of places just for the adult daycare experience. And my mother would say, "What's wrong with all these sick people? Why are we in here?" So I realized she just wouldn't act like the people around her own age. So it was just, I have no idea what it was. I'll tell you that. But she just was not comfortable. And when the nursing home told me in terms of the daycare, "So what if my mother wants to leave in an hour?" And they says, "We lock all the doors. She don't have a choice." So I said, okay. So those kind of things, Ms. Renee, just, I'm going to tell you. I had to go in my spirit sometimes. I didn't have all the answers. And if it said don't. So then I have to find a way. And this is where in the book it talks about how I use technology, which I didn't have a clue at first how to facilitate this. But I just couldn't put her in there because of my word. That's the simple answer. Even if she wouldn't even remember it, I just couldn't put my mother there. I just really couldn't.
I do understand. I had gone to visit. My mother didn't have I've later learned my mother had Parkinson's, which is a kind of dementia. I did not know that. It was a caregiver. The physicians never told me it was a kind of dementia. But I'd gone one day, and I lived 6 hours away. And I'd gone to visit her as a surprise, and they had them looking for paper clips inside I guess I'm doing the thing.
Don't
clay.
You scare
I'm
me
sorry.
Now. Come this on now.
Clay.
You got this.
I know. I think it's just so emotional. It's so emotional for me. Yeah. And so they had me doing that. And so when the guy came over and realized I was her daughter, and he said, "Why don't you encourage her to do that?" And my mother was one of those kind of women like your mother, and she said, and I said, "Mom, why don't you do that? See how many you can find." And she said, "Well, if you think it's so much fun, why don't you do it?" And I couldn't laugh.
Yes.
That was so my mother. You know, it was like, "Yes, you think it's fun? You do it. You do it." Oh, okay. Now, I think you just have kicked up so much emotion for those of us who were not able to do it. As I said, my mother was 6 hours away, and we made a different choice, and it was equally a hard choice.
Yes.
So the question is, how important did you believe it was, not just your promise to her, but how important was it to keep a person in familiar environment?
Most people will tell you it's very important because they'll feel secure in that environment. When they go to visit, like we went to visit family, and so we're in a different household. Thanksgiving, everyone wanted my mother to come. We were out of there in 30 minutes because it wasn't familiar to her, and a lot of people and a lot of boys. So it's key, and I want to be honest about this. It is key to keep them there as long as possible. And the reason I said that, my mother got to the point where she didn't recognize her home, and so she just said, "Whose house is this? I want to go home," which is a very common refrain of people suffering from it. Home, I didn't know at the time, I've since learned, home is a place of security and safety. So she would hear the neighbors next door in the row house, and so she thought she was insecure. There were times she would say, "Somebody's in my house, come on over here." But because of the cameras and the sensors, I could see there was no one there, but I also could hear the loudness next door. And I called the neighbors and asked them, could they kindly tone it down? I put things in her house on her wall saying, this is Gloria's house. Gloria lives here, to try to have that visual stimulus, and maybe that would reach something in her mind to let her know she lived here. So, they, you know, it's strange just grasping for straws, because there was nothing available, nothing in terms of grassroots, here's what to do when this happens. It was all clinical, and none of it dealt at this root level that I was dealing with. So those are some of the things I would say to people. And I don't judge people. If they put them in a home, hopefully they put them in a good home that takes care of them. That is not for everyone. That's a hard financial choice. When they said basically what it was going to cost, and we had to liquidate all assets. I said, so if my mother in 2 years wants to come out of here, I'll get tired of her and put her out, but we've sold her home and all her assets, what happens? They said, that's your problem. So that's another thing.
And
I
No, you're absolutely right. And again, having been faced with that and living so far away and having only one person who was providing care, and my understanding is that we got a deal. My mother's care cost over $5,000 a month. And my mother always bragged about how she has been working since she was 15 years old. And I almost wept when I thought about all that she had saved, all that she had done was gone. And we were sitting there with one of those sort of cardboard closets that they give them where you can hang a few garments in there. And I thought, my mother would, she would be appalled that I worked from age 15 until now, and this is what I'm left with. It was very, very, very disturbing. But as you pointed out, and I'm so glad that we're not making judgments about people who did put their family in institutions and those who are able to keep them home, you have to do what's right for your family. There's no cookie cutter, one size fits all. Yeah.
Brad,
did you
want to
jump in here?
Yeah, let me ask this question, because you mentioned aging in place. And the AARP chapter in Prince George County have asked me to produce and host their show, radio show for them. And the title is of the show is going to be Aging in Place. And from your experience, what would be one of the first shows that we should talk about in terms of aging in place? Because society is getting older, people living longer, maybe not necessarily good health longer, especially these crazy baby boomers of 78 million did everything they could do bad enough and big enough to do, and now they physically and mentally and emotionally starting to deal from it. But what would you say in terms of aging in place is something someone should look at? And we're going to, that's the music again, so I got to go in my pocket again. So, well, I'd like you to answer that on the other side of the break. I appreciate it. Ms. Renee, take it away.
All right, sir. You are listening to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Are you looking for an active older adult group that cares about all the issues that you care about? Check out AARP 939 of Suitland, Maryland, the only chapter in Prince George's County. President Catherine Williams invites you to join her and many of your neighbors and friends. They meet every first Tuesday of the month at 12 o'clock noon at the Knights of Columbus, 3611 Stewart Road in Forest Hill, Maryland. The next meeting is Tuesday, the 12th of September at the Knights of Columbus, again, at 3611 Stewart Road in Forest Hill, Maryland. Do you need more information? Email them at aarp939@yahoo.com. That's aarp939@yahoo.com. And back over to you, Reverend Ray, so we can get the answer to your very insightful question.
Yes. So, Mr. Reggie, I'm going to be producing and hosting a radio show for AARP in in Preakness County, and the show is called Aging in Place, and you had just mentioned about aging in place. So from your in hands-on, what would you say some of the things and programs that we could look at and topics in terms of aging in place?
One of the things I would encourage everyone to look at is to understand that as we age, we tend to maybe have a loss of mobility or strength. So I would first look at my environment. Are there things I can adjust so that I'm not reaching as much or putting so much weight to move around? For some, that's as simple as moving things closer down to counter level so people can reach them. For others, we change door locks so they're easier to open and close because people might get arthritis or something that challenges them. Another might be the lighting in the home. You might want to change from real dark curtains to light curtains. You might want to put some automatic lamps or things that come on and go off for the person. So they're not. We change the smoke detectors. They have a brand that not only senses carbon, but the lights come on if it detects motion. So it was kind of like a night light in the ceiling in case someone has to go to the bathroom, something like that. Night lights are another thing because people's vision, they may get a little dimmer or something. So I would look at what tends to happen as we get older, and then I'd look at the environment of the home, and I would make those changes. For my mother, one of the things that I did, only because I realized something was wrong, I pulled her rugs up. She kept walking around the rugs as though something was wrong, and the dementia had caused a depth perception problem. And so she would freeze and walk around. So for throw rugs and things, for a lot of people, that's not an issue. But as we get older, maybe that 2 inches to lift your foot up or just move it across different surfaces might be a challenge. So I would look at those kinds of things. I would ask people also, I believe in asking, the very person I'm trying to support and help, what works for them? Forget the studies. That's what I would do.
What works for them?
Yeah.
Well, that leads me right to my next question. Yeah, that leads me to my next question. Reggie, how did you address the increasing childlike behavior and yet respect your mother's adulthood?
Mr. Renee, I got two warnings. One, the doctor told me that. The doctor said, always respect your mother. And I said, I try. But it's hard to do when she's acting like a three-year-old. And I meant that because she would sometimes be stubborn. Sometimes she would give that old look. Sometimes she just really needed to be, I don't know, shaken, if you will. And I remember one time she was carrying on, and I was slowly raising my voice. And I think the third time, it says, no, you cannot do that. And I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden, she said in a deep voice, who do you think you're talking to? My mom was back. Dementia ran out on that one. My mom was back. I'm bowing my head. And I'm expecting that slap. Oh, I mean, it's like, that ain't fair. You got to give a word. I understand what they said. Whatever you do, maintain their dignity. And that's going to be hard, like you just said, when they're acting anything but dignified. Maintain their dignity. And another time was my mother was adamant she was going to drive that car. And so we tried to do things. One time we had the car towed. She called the police. Somebody stole my car. They didn't know any better. Okay, brought the car back. So we disabled the starter. She done called the neighborhood mechanic. He fixed it. He didn't know no better. So I decided to take the keys, and I come on back down to Maryland. And my mother called me, and, yeah, Mom, she says, look, you better bring me. No, she said, where are my keys? I said, Mom, what keys are you talking about? Don't play with me. Where are my keys? You got a lot of keys. She's like, bring me my GD keys, and hung up on me. Okay, so I learned. I mean, that was reaching way back. That was touching the button she touched when I was a kid. I wasn't nothing with her no more. So that was because I was told and because I witnessed it, maintain their dignity because they are adults. And yes, dementia is starting to erode some of their behavior and value propositions because their decision-making is starting to go and all that. But we still of sound mind should always treat them with dignity. And one time I came to take her to the doctors, she said she was ready to go, and she had her bra on the outside of her blouse. So, you usually wear it different than that. She's like, ain't nothing wrong with this, let's go. I said, no, how about we take it off? She took it off, and she went out there, and her ladies was jiggling all over the place, and people were looking at me like, how dare you come out here with your mother, and she's not secure. I'm telling you, they don't know what you go through, but you try your best to give and take is what I would say. You try your best.
I was going to go there. How you as a male dealing with your mother that's a female, as you get to the point where her personal hygiene and personal things have to be taken care of. And this is the thing that me and Miss Renee, my wife, has agreed upon, that when she gets to the point, if she gets to the point that she cannot take care of herself, that to still keep our romance and her dignity and our relationship, that I will hire someone to come
there
in and you know, as a female to take care of those things for her. So how did you have that when you start realizing in terms of her personal care need to be addressed?
Not very well. You want to know the short answer? Not very well. You know, one of the things the doctor said, we need to know if your mother goes to the bathroom. Now, I'm living 2 hours away. I says, why is that? Because she could have constipation. So what am I supposed to do? You got to go in there after her to see if she had a bowel movement. I'm like, that ain't happening. So they said, well, you got cameras. I'm not putting a camera in my mother's bathroom. Now, and I say that me not just watching, I'm not comfortable with, let alone touching my mother's body. Now, washing her face and underarms is one thing, but I just couldn't get there. So I did seek family members who could maybe come and bathe her. I tried a couple of different caregivers who she wouldn't let touch her. The other she did. So it's not just that simple. You just get someone of the same gender to come in. It's really not that simple. We have a male caregivers group, and that's one of the biggest issues. How do you touch your mom's intimate parts and things like that? And most will say, I shy away from it. I won't. So I don't have a clear do this and it will work. It's going to challenge you is what I'm going to say. Maybe you just leave a wet washcloth and soap and she'll figure it out. Or you just say, hey, I ran you a sink of water. That didn't work for me because I felt my mother was biting into the bars of soap, so I had to remove all the soap in the house. I don't have a clear-cut answer. I can tell you my experience. I couldn't bathe my mom. Well, no.
Yeah, you know, I'd gone to my hairdresser one time, and he was complaining about that his girlfriend's brother was taking care of the mother, and he wouldn't take care of her personal needs. And I said, and he shouldn't. And he looked at me surprised, and I said, no, that's crossing a line. He can't do that. I get that. And I guess he just needed to hear an outside voice to say, no, that's very uncomfortable. I was female. And I couldn't do that with my mother because my mother was such a strong woman. I could not cross that line and was not aware of it until you're sharing this story and I'm sharing and reading the book. And but here I was, same gender, and you would think, oh, that shouldn't be hard, but it actually was. So thank you for sharing that because, you know, sometimes we cover the surface. And we're very, you know, the nicey-nice things. But that's one of those hard, nitty-gritty things that we do need to talk about. Let me ask you about the four S's. You mentioned them, saner, smarter, safer, and scenarios. And I want to unpack those four concepts because, believe it or not, we are running out of time. So let's talk about saner. You talk about developing an enlightened caregiver mindset for improving the caregiver's sanity. What exactly do you mean by that?
The first thing the caregiver has to understand is that they are responsible for themselves as well as the loved one who's stricken. And if they go down, if they're some kind of way unable to function, then two people are at risk. A lot of times the caregivers will cut their sleep, won't eat, won't hydrate, things like that. This is unlike anything else most people have ever done if they've never been with someone who's really dependent upon them and really sick. So I couch it as a journey. almost sort of like you're in the car and you're driving, and dementia, when it feels like, reaches over and snatches that steering wheel and the car is going off the road. It can be devastating. And if you're not prepared for that and you're doubting yourself, then stress is going to eat you up. So the first thing is the caregiver has to realize self-preservation. They have to, if they're going to be any good at what they do. Also in the sanity, the more you kind of understand that there are limits to what you can do, the better, because now we're bringing your expectations in line with the realities of what this disease does. So you're not as frustrated. That's why the sanity is the first part of the book, because that's the first thing that goes after you get out of denial, after you get out of bargaining, once you get into acceptance, and then it's like, now what? Now that I accepted this, now what? But a lot of times, just like me, you are so stressed that when you call family, the cavalry is not coming, they're abandoning you. You can't make sense of things. You doubt yourself, and all of that takes its toll on you. And I even say that to people whose loved ones have passed on. They think it's over. It's not over. You still have residual concerns and doubts that I do the right thing. So that's what I mean by the sanity part of it.
Wow. You're absolutely right. Okay, your second S is smarter. Who needs to be smarter?
That caregiver needs to be smarter, because dementia is just going to do what it does to the sufferer. So that's why the book is for the caregiver. You need to be smarter about what's going on. And I tell everyone, every time you visit your loved one, every day you see them, be in a learning mode. They may not repeat the same thing. Sometimes they will change within an hour four or five times. You have to – I go into discovery mode when I went to see my mother. Be smart about what's going on. And this is where – this bleeds over into SAFER. There were things I learned about my mother because of the cameras that she would mask and not do while I was sitting there. Oh, they will lie to you. It will do all kinds of things. Because, one, they don't want to draw attention to it. And two, they don't want your pity. So if you're like, so there was one time the caregiver, the one I hired, she called me. She was worried. She says, your mother's not eating. She's not eating. I said, okay, let me just check it out. So when the caregiver left, and my mother's at the door waving her goodbye, she closed the door and went in there and devoured that food. She jumped on it like a lion. And so I learned that there's a part where they get to, they don't like eating around others. So while we're worried in our ignorance, finding that out now and in the book, I can help others to stop worrying.
Now, you know, you talk about SAFER. Now, you did something I had never heard of. You placed cameras throughout your mother's home, and you mentioned only one caregiver balked at that arrangement. How were you able to monitor that? I mean, you were 2 hours away.
Basically, because we did have the Internet, I upgraded some of the things in the home. And this is another challenge. Most of our networks are about download speed. I needed upload speed for camera images and sound. So that's another thing you had to kind of learn on the fly. I put the cameras and the sensors there because, see, in the bathroom I could put a sensor. I know she went to the bathroom because there's a motion sensor that goes off, and I could tell how long she was in there. So urinating is quicker usually than defecating. When she would want to go to that door at night, well, when she got within 10 feet of that door, it alerts me on my phone, just like you get a text. You can tell the system to text you when there's an alert. So that's kind of how you do it. My mother also tore out the thermostat in the wall because she said it was too cold. I had to put a lockbox on it so that she couldn't tear it out the wall. But I got a remote control so I could manage the temperature in her house and pay attention to whether she had on two or three sweaters to turn the air up or turn the heat up and things like that. So that's how I got her safer in her own environment, because if it was not comfortable, she was going to try to flee outside of it.
Scenarios. It's fascinating. We're gonna give him a chance to tell people where they can get this book. It's not a very long book. It's more like a handbook. But I underlined all the things that I needed to remember and that I wish I had known. The last S you talk about is scenarios. Develop a strategic checklist of who and what are useful and when to implement the tactics. Explain that to those of us who are either new to caregiving or have been doing it in a different way and are ready for a better methodology?
The first thing I would tell your audience is that when you suspect your loved one has some kind of cognitive challenge, immediately try to get a sense of financial and legal control of their affairs. Because if they get, if you wait too long and they're not what they call of sound mind, then the attorneys cannot affect those instruments, and therefore the state is going to be making decisions for your loved one. So as soon as you think something's wrong, get on their checking account if you can. Get a power of attorney for legal, a power of attorney for medical. Most people don't want to talk about their home going. But I also, all in one sitting, we got a trust and we got a will all put into place. And the way I had to couch it to her is that, you know, you're in control of everything. I just want to put something in writing that says, if something goes wrong, I'm authorized to take care of you. They're not going to believe me by my words. So I need something in writing. Is that okay? She said that was okay. So that's the biggest thing I would say to anyone, because we usually don't have a background in those legal documents and the procedures. Get that done first. Second, in the scenarios I talk about, paying attention to what kind of day they're having. So when they're having a good day, go and enjoy that, especially for you, the caregiver, because if they're not challenged that day, that's like going on vacation. Suck it up and have so much fun. When they're having an average day and they're going in and out of it, just dance with it, what I call the dementia dance. And when they're having a bad day, pick your battles, take your lumps, help them through it, because it will change. People talk about, they ask me the same question 7, 8, 9 times. I can't stand it. Well, there's going to come a time they won't ask you any question because they've lost their language skills, because they're not getting out the bed anymore, because they have no energy. So it, those are scenarios I tell them. Be cognizant of it, because this thing, and I'm going to tell your audience, it does not reverse. You can hold out hope all you want. It's not getting better. They're coming up with little drugs and things to maybe slow it down, but that's not the nature of it. So please, given the scenarios you find yourself in, celebrate those good days. When you have it.
All right,
you
we're going to go to our final break. We're going to go to our final break, Brother Reggie. Then we're going to come back on the other side and have some practical to-dos and not-to-dos. All right, thank you so much. Ms. Renee.
You are listening to Sight and Vision, Disability and Senior Talk Radio. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Back over to Reverend Ray and our special guest, Reginald A. Lawson, who wrote the book, At Home with Dementia. Reverend Ray, let me share a story with you, Reggie. My mother had Parkinson's, which made her aphasic, meaning she wasn't able to speak. And I would go up there, and it was, I'd go up there for 6 hours. And I would see her, and she wasn't able to speak. And there's a facade that Parkinson's does. Your face, all the emotion is gone from the face. It's just flat. And sometimes she would track with her eyes. Sometimes she didn't. And so Raymond hadn't gone up in a really long time. And so he came up, and she looked. And she was just tracking. She still hadn't spoken. And she tracked. And I said, Mommy, do you know who that is? And she said, Raymond. And I almost fell over. I hadn't heard her speak in like the 2-5 trips before. And at that point, I laid on the bed. I said, Mommy, please say my name. If you don't, he will tease me. All the rest of my Mommy, please say my name. She said, oh, girl, your name is Renee. And I was but that was, it was one of the funniest, because she had not spoken. But when she saw him, somewhere in the midst of all of this, she said it. And so Raymond and I tease it, because I told him, if you don't say my name, he will never let me forget it, Mommy. He won't. He won't. So back over to you, Reverend Ray, to finish that, your question.
Yeah, I did intentionally build a good relationship with her mother. I mean, even though she was in Ohio, I would call her. I would send her money. Renee didn't know. She probably thought me and her was going together or something. but I purposely, I was intentional in building a relationship with her. So that's why. But And this I know this is really, really emotional for Renee and all, and I really appreciate this. But and Reggie, you said you do have a support group for men. Tell me about that, and how often do you all meet, and who qualifies to be part of this group, and how did this group even find out about you?
Once a month. Right now we're doing it second Saturday of the month. right now we're doing it at 12 in the afternoon, and it's by Zoom. So anyone, and I have people from Atlanta, from Michigan, and from Delaware. As long as you can get to the internet, you can be a part of it. And basically, even though we speak about dementia, it's about caregiving, period. There are people, there are caregiving men whose loved one has cancer and things like that. So we all go through some of the same challenges. It's just a matter of getting the link, and usually if someone sends their email or by word of mouth, we get them on. Usually I'll have one particular topic I'll put up first because I've spoken to some, and this is what's bothering them. So I'll put that one up. We'll have sort of a reflection on that, and then I open the floor up to whatever anyone wants to talk about. And the reason it was put together, men have a different language and cadence than the ladies. And a lot of the support groups are chaired by the ladies, and a lot of times the men sit there in the wings and don't say anything because either they don't want to be self-reporting, or they don't want to be coddled or reassured with soft words. They want to know the real thing, and does this get better? No. Okay, thank you for telling me that, man. All right, now I'm okay now. That kind of thing. So it is once a month right now. We, as a matter of fact, here in Prince George's County, we're going to try to do a couple of local things, once, especially if we get the churches back up and doors open, to work with some of their ministries to teach them how to set up and run these types of groups. But as far as I know, from what I'm told, mine may be the only one in the area that is targeting active, as well as previous male caregivers.
And on that note, I you know, like Ms. Renee said, she knew a gentleman that, you know, he was taking care of his mother. And I'm more and more hearing different men that's taking care of, you know, their mother as a caregiver. I mean, which is, you know, I mean, just not amazing to me, but just that, and I guess it's kept on such a low, you know, on such a low underground because they don't want to talk about it. I guess they don't even know who to go to talk about it. So my question to you, when you was going through this, was there any support for you?
Yes, there was support, but I wasn't having it. I mean, when I first heard it, I'm pounding my chest saying, I got this. I mean, I've got enough background and intellect and everything. Whatever it is, I got this. And wasn't too long after that, no, I don't got this. And he was saying, what I thought was a support group, I didn't want to sit around in a circle in a chair and crying. So I didn't look it up. I looked online, but like I said, it was all clinical. So they were around, and me going between Delaware and Maryland and thinking wrongly, I have to go into a building and sit down with a bunch of people as though I needed therapy. I was too busy just trying to take care of my mom and run my business and figure out what to do with my life, because I had to give up one of the things I loved the most, which was track coaching for high school, because I couldn't be there. And I just wasn't feeling like I wanted to listen to somebody else. I had to figure this out on the run. So, yes, they were there, but I did not avail myself of it.
Well, okay, Reg,
well,
I want to thank you very much for being this.
Yeah.
You wanted to say something, Mr. Renee?
No, I was just going to say this hour has gone far too fast, and there's far too much information that you have. But can you tell listeners how they can purchase your book, At Home with Dementia,
The
Caregiver Strategy?
It is on Amazon. For those that are not in this area, they can purchase it on Amazon. It usually gets delivered 2 days later. I would encourage gifting it, and I'm not trying to make any particular money from it. I'm trying to reach out and help those who are on this path, on this journey that I was on, and I was not going to just not leave road signs and breadcrumbs to help somebody else. So that's where the book can be purchased, is on Amazon.
Okay, and you have a website, Reggie?
I do. I will need to. I would like to send that to you. It's a long name.
Okay.
RedOracle.com.
Sure. Okay. We'll post it. And of course,
okay,
and for those who. And for those who heard Mr. Reggie say he's not trying to make money, well, no, I want y'all to buy as many books as you can because I want him to make money for when I have a fundraiser, invite him out to dinner with me and Miss Renee, he can pay for it. Okay, so Reggie, thank you very much. Thank
fair
you
enough,
very
fair
much
enough.
Being our guest. And we will have you back on again. And like I said, I'm going to be working with AARP. And so I'm certainly going to be reaching out to you to be part of that. Thank you very much, Reggie, and God bless to you. All righty. Thank you.
To both of you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, okay. All right. So
all right,
Reb,
we
got to
close this out.
Yeah. All right. So I will close it out with this exciting Vision Disability and Talk Radio show. I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and I always like to say I might not have sight, but I can have vision. Vision, vision.
Thank you for listening to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Our special guest was Reginald A. Lawson, author of At Home with Dementia, Caregiver Strategies for Safer Outcomes. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Want to hear this show again or listen to a past show? Go to RevRayRazor.com. That's RevRayRazor.com. I'm sorry, RevRayRazor.com. This has been a Razor Edge production, Sight and Vision, Disability, and Senior Talk Radio. We'll see you here next Friday at 3 o'clock p.m.